Good afternoon, everyone. I hope everyone's healthy and safe. And I do need to remind everyone that this session is being recorded. So if you could be kind enough to mute your phones as soon as you join, it'd be much appreciated, especially since we're all at home with our dogs and our kids fighting. It makes it even more comical. And I will apologize because my dog's next to me. So if she barks, my apologies first and foremost. I'm Scott Morris. I'm a partner and chief compliance officer of Stephen Einstein & Associates PC in New York and New Jersey. And more importantly, I'd like to introduce the two gentlemen who are on the panel with me who don't need introductions because of their popularity and their input in our industry. But let's start with Don Maurice, who's a partner at Maurice Wichter, LLP, representing the financial services industry in compliance matters, trials, and appeals of individuals and class actions with offices throughout the United States. Don is a regent of the American College of Consumer Financial Services Lawyers and serves in the governing committee of the Conference of Consumer Finance Law. He formerly chaired the Debt Collection Practices and Bankruptcy Subcommittee of the American Bar Association and serves as outside counsel to Receivables Management Association International, the trade association for debt purchasers. He's admitted to the bars of Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, and the District of Columbia. And then we have Nathan Wilner, who serves as a government affairs officer of the National Creditors Bar Association. Prior to representing the NCBA in federal, state, and regulatory matters and advocacy, he was counsel for 11 years for the regional creditors rights firm of Lyons, Dougherty, and Veldis, PC, where he managed the firm's legislative affairs and concentrated his Maryland law practices in the area of consumer retail litigation. So welcome, gentlemen. So we do want to welcome everyone to what we're calling How to Do the Right Thing When Collecting in a COVID-19 Environment, the Moral and Legislative Effects of Taking Missteps. Coming off of a terrific presentation on the constitutional impacts of COVID-19 by Ron Cantor and Manny Neuberger, our panel will now discuss some of the very important questions that impact our firm as we seek to stay in business. So I'm going to deep dive right into it because we have a lot to talk about, and I'll start with you, Don, around the question of how do you balance the morality of collecting in this environment against the economic impacts of your firm and clientele?
It's great to be back here, Scott, with so many friends who are on the call. It's a softball question you threw out to me, right? How can you do that? I mean, there is no easy answer. I think that the best way that I could approach this is by trying to put into context everything that has happened. We began January of this year with a lot of consumer debt. It was up to $14 trillion, the most we've seen ever. And that's up from $8 trillion in 2004. Delinquency rates were trending upwards, mostly on credit card and auto loan. About 70 million people had been contacted by debt collectors. That's nearly 40% of the adult population. And while that's a sobering number, the total delinquency per household was going down. So it's grown the amount of debt because there's more people, but it was heading downward as far as the total delinquency that was attributed to each household. And things otherwise looked really rosy on February 28th of this year. I think the stock market was in 10 years of a bull market, and unemployment was practically nil. And that all changed in the next 31 days. New York City reported its first coronavirus sufferer on March 1, and there was a pocket we had in parts of Washington State, California, as well. And then by the end of last month, over 21 million people in the New York metropolitan area, the financial capital of the world, were essentially ordered to stay at home. Entire industries have been shuttered, including construction and retail. And now throughout the U.S., many people cannot leave their home except for essential services. Many can no longer work in their offices, and certainly they can't work in stores and on construction sites. When we first saw this on March 1, New York City reported that it had 1,200 beds available. Today, there are over 10,000 who are hospitalized in New York City. The problem I think it poses for us is that our ethics are developed over time and they're drawn from the circumstances surrounding us. But as I pointed out, things have changed very quickly. And how we conduct ourselves in our daily lives, the change was so abrupt that many have not even captured the fundamental changes that have occurred. And I think this is particularly so for us lawyers. Our daily routines are grounded by statutes, rules, and regulations. And these are not quickly adapted to abrupt changes. And because of that, I think that we as lawyers are in a special space of having to function a business and a practice that no longer in many places can work the way it did before. So what do you do now? You can't file complaints now in some states. You can't execute on wages. You can't garnish. You cannot do bank account executions. Foreclosures have been stopped. Evictions have been stopped. We are not, though, the only ones who are subjected to a loss of our business and our practice. I just pointed out construction is, retail is. And the question, of course, is, well, what can you do? And I don't have an answer for that. It's so dependent on each locale. As I think about what is available, though, I think about what a collection law firm can do with its special expertise. It can certainly handle calls and incoming calls and work with consumers on doing deferrals. And maybe that is something that we have to think about. Can we reach out to our clients? Can we talk to our clients about helping them service the deferral calls that they're receiving? And they're getting a lot of calls. Mortgage Bankers Association reported this morning that the request for deferrals is up 2,000%. That's a lot in one month, and that's over a million people asking for deferrals. They can't handle the volume of the calls. Credit card companies are the same things. But maybe that is something that we can be doing. I haven't seen anything that would say that we can't talk to people about deferrals. We can't make outbound calls in Massachusetts, that's for sure. And other places are putting similar restrictions, but we can letter. And maybe when we have the letter, maybe that's something that we need to talk about, putting it in that context. But I think the problem really is, Scott, is that the mindset of persons who are subjected to debt collection is a little bit different today than it was a month ago. There was a question whether they even had the moral imperative to pay a four-year-old debt. But today I could say they certainly lack it completely. They're thinking about toilet paper and N95 masks, and I don't think they're thinking about their credit scores.
Absolutely.
And so if you want to file a complaint or if you want to do a garnishment, I think you have to ask, what good is it going to do? What good is it going to do in a place like New York City, where you have so many people that were in industries like restaurants and hotels and construction that no longer even have a job? What good can it bring at this point? But maybe the outreach has some good and allows you to continue functioning. And also, I would say, reach out to your clients. Talk to your clients. They may need help in other areas that are related to exactly what you're doing.
I think those are all great points, Don. And, as someone who's practicing in there, especially right in the middle of New York, it's certainly been hard to make those moral decisions as to the economic impacts of having 70 employees and keeping them all employed and making money, as you stated, in what was a really good time for our industry versus the now and how it is today. And, one of the things, and I'd like to turn it over to Nathan on this, is the short-term value of collecting. You started talking, Don, about how what is the good of doing suits and garnishments. I think one of the things I've been doing, especially as I work with Nathan in New York State Creditors Bar as well as NCBA, is what are the short-term impacts of doing debt collection versus the potential long-term ramifications? And I think this is something that not all lawyers are always thinking about, and I think this is a good story to tell, Nathan.
Yeah, so thank you, first of all, for both of you getting on this call and taking the time to discuss these important issues. It's uncharted territory in some ways, but we have, as an industry and as a country, gone through other type of situations. Unfortunately, Scott, you've been in New York where you've had 9/11 and Hurricane Sandy, and you've had situations where you've had to take a look at hardship policies from a different perspective, but it is unique that the entire country and the whole world is dealing with this. So, you know, what I'm hearing from certain practitioners and people in the industry, I can tell you that most of those people that are involved in the industry on a heavy level are being responsible and do get it. But occasionally you do hear of someone who, and this is a term that I've been saying and hearing more and more, is tone deaf, not really understanding or not showing compassion to the condition that people find themselves in right now. You know, one thing that our industry cannot afford is to be, long-term foolish on their behavior now. So, for instance, something I heard, which I was glad to report did not go forward, but that doesn't mean other people aren't hearing similar things from clients, where a small creditor asked an agency to kind of put together a letter campaign to attack or try to get money out of the $1,200 stimulus payments people are going to get. Thankfully, in that situation, the agency pushed back and said there's no way they're doing that. But that story just tells you that there are people in this industry that maybe aren't looking at things properly, and they're not looking long-term on how their behavior today is going to affect regulatory changes from all across the board and legislation. Even now, when we deal with proposed legislation that is detrimental to our industry, the things that they talk about are things that are no longer even happening, maybe behaviors that were going on 10 years ago, which tells me that the way we behave now is going to be the narrative of advocates who want to take away the rights of our clients and the way that our law firms operate. From being in this industry so long, I can tell you that the members that I deal with and the people in the industry I deal with are among the most ethical and compliant attorneys, period, regardless of the practice area. But that's a story that we've had a challenge to get out there for years to explain to the general public and legislators and regulators of all the hoops we jump through to make sure we are dotting our I's and crossing our T's. So the behavior over the next 3-4 months in this industry can wipe away all the good work that we've done if we're not careful about how we present the issue. Speaking to members, and some of this is anecdotal in nature, but I know that most of our members are getting, massive amount of inbound calls, and anyone who even remotely mentions the hardship of this virus are getting, reworks of payment plans, even if it's in a consent judgment. No matter what was done previously, I know that our members are bending over backwards to make sure that people that are dealing with hardship are getting the compassion they require. But again, that's a story that we need to make sure the general public knows.
And I think that's a great point. And whether you speak to, Don or Manny Neuberger, I think one of the things to always think about is not only the legislative, but the media, which we all know in this country, the media drives a lot of thought and a lot of the controversies that we sometimes have to fight against. And I would just raise this out to, the people listening today is, do you want to be the firm that is the one that, does an enforcement action or a lawsuit in today's time against a 60, 70-year-old person who just lost one of their close relatives from COVID-19. Just think about how that can inflame the legislator to do what Nathan's talked about, which is really put us 20 years backwards from all the work we've done to bring our organizations to where we are. And, I think the other side that I'd really love to touch on, Don, and Manny touched about it a little bit yesterday, but I'd love for you to talk about the potential FDCPA impacts of this as to if you try to file lawsuits and you are not considered an essential service. Is there a potential FDCPA liability to you if you bring actions in this environment or seek to make outbound calls?
we're lawyers and we represent clients, and the clients ask us to do work. And as long as the law permits us to do that work, we have to do it. And we need to also think about the fact that as lawyers, we have to make sure that our clients have access to the legal system. And if it means filing a complaint, then we have to file a complaint. Now, those areas of the country, and again, I'm thinking of Massachusetts as one, and there's a bill right now, supposedly at this moment, going through the DC Council that would ban or prohibit the filing or initiation of a lawsuit, or I guess an arbitration, during this emergency. If that were in place and there were tolling to go along with it, then I would say that the lawyer should really carefully consider whether a complaint is something that they could do. But let's say you don't have tolling, and there is this perception around the country today that any collection action is just a morally bad thing to do. I don't agree with that, but what do you do? Well, you better have something in place that allows you to identify whether or not a person is under extreme hardships, because we know a lot of people are. We can't ignore the fact that right now there are a lot of people suffering hardship. It's different than it was in February, where usually you wouldn't know it until someone reached out and told you. But today, you can look to certain areas and put together the pieces that will tell you how bad is it in a certain place. I prepared for our clients a map that allows them to at least begin to identify them. And the way the points that I'm looking for are, is there a stay-at-home order in place? Is there widespread business closure? Has there been guidance issued by regulators in that state about forbearance or about giving consumers the option to skip payments, whether they're credit card or insurance or a mortgage? Have they banned certain legal actions? Particularly, you'll see these foreclosures and evictions. And if I piece all of these together, it gives me an idea that things are pretty bad in that place. And so before I was to file a complaint, I think that it's probably best for an attorney to do a careful look at the particular circumstances of that person. And if there's nothing to indicate that they aren't suffering the same hardships that the rest of their surrounding community are, then I would refrain from doing it. But I think otherwise, Scott, we can't forget that we have obligations to our clients to make sure they have access to the legal system, and that we have to continue doing it. Some places are very different still, and while the courts may be restricted somewhat, business has been going on as usual. I hope that doesn't change. But if we are to act in other places, I think we have to be very mindful that whatever we had to identify hardships before March 1, we need different tools today.
Absolutely. And as you stated, Don, and I'd love to expound on it, is we as lawyers have an ethical responsibility to our clients. And the term client continues, and you represent the RMAI, which is a large constituency of the clients we represent. If your client has a different perspective now, because let's say they don't understand how catastrophic it is in New York, or they're placing, in your opinion as an attorney, too much emphasis on the short-term economic, what would your advice be as to, you know, handling that situation? Would you just say, you know, disregard them, or what would the counseling be? You know, what would your suggestions be on that?
Well, if you look at the preamble to the model rules, I'm not going to go state by state, but look at the preamble to the model rules and just look up ABA model rules of professional conduct and read through that. And that's the most generalized advice I can give you right now. There isn't a rule dealing with pandemics yet, but maybe there will be after we get through this. But what we need to do as lawyers, part of our work is to counsel our clients, and we have to explain to them what the restrictions are that we have in place, what the restrictions are we have concerning the filing of lawsuits and garnishments, what the circumstances are, all the things I talked about before. We also should be mindful of, and I didn't fully elaborate on this when I talked about this hardship analysis that we're doing. 1692D under FDCPA is harassment, and you take that consumer as you find them. And if you find the consumer suffering these types of hardships, I mean, look, I cannot leave, Scott, same thing. We cannot leave our homes except maybe to go get groceries or pharmaceuticals or I think I can go to my office and pick up the mail. I can't do anything else other than that. If I want to get groceries right now, it's taking 10 days. To put the order in and to get the groceries available for me to pick up. Plus, we have to wait an hour now to even get on the website to be able to do that. So am I thinking about paying debt if I'm a consumer in those circumstances? No. What I'm thinking about is how do I get my groceries? Because I'm spending, instead of spending an hour, it's taking me hours to do that. The client needs to understand that. The client also needs to appreciate the restrictions that are placed on you as a lawyer, because it's not just what the courts are telling you. The courts are asking for you in many ways, and they're not outright saying it, but if you don't need to bring it, if it's not an emergent action, you shouldn't be bringing it. The court systems are very restricted as to number of personnel who can handle filings. You also have the health concerns. Do you really want to send a constable or a marshal or a sheriff to go do an execution in the midst of public social distancing requirements? They're probably not even going to do it anyway. If the client is looking for you to have to do certain things that you believe are not a question of access to the courts or are not necessary to protect the client's position or their rights, and you think that the moral perception or the societal perception of what you're doing is wrong, then you're within all of your rights to say no to that. And I think that that it would be important for you to make the client aware that you're not only protecting the public perception of your firm, but also you're protecting the public perception of the client. And if the client doesn't understand that, well, then I guess the question is that a client that you really want? What other problems? What other concerns may be lurking behind that type of train of thought?
And I think that's a really great point, Don, is this will open your eyes to potentially some of your peers as well as some of your clients and whether they are. I know even from a vendor perspective, there's some vendors who are willing to work with you as you try to reduce costs and keep your firm in businesses, and there's some that are unwilling to. And, you know, I think, Nathan, one of the things we've generally seen throughout time, whether you're in COVID-19 or not, is there's always competition, whether it's healthy or not, in different states and municipalities, against your peers. And, you know, one of the questions that always comes up, especially from an economic perspective, is if your peers are starting to have higher scorecards and continuing to sue and doing things to make their economic value to the client higher, does it put pressure on you in this environment or any environment to do the same thing, even though you don't feel it's right? And I'd love to get your perspective of, you know, how would you handle the situation if you have a law firm in your jurisdiction that you're competing with that is really putting on more economic pressure on you because you feel like they are being a bad apple in today's environment?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And it's a question that I think many firms deal with all year round, but especially during a crisis like this, where you know, we're trying to balance keeping everyone employed, your bottom line, keeping the client happy, and then dealing with everything else that's coming with this health crisis. You know, the one thing that I would tell people is don't be penny wise and pound foolish. And that is what I'm seeing as across the board. I think most of the industry gets that and is understanding that, you know, again, as Don was mentioning, you know, if your client's rights are protected, you don't have a statute of limitations issue because either the court's closed or it's not coming up. There's nothing really to gain by moving forward right at this moment. You know, communication is key with your clients and, you know, with the consumer as well. So understanding, if you take a look at a file and it's a $500 balance and you see you have employment information, the guy works at Applebee's or whatever and hasn't and is not working because he's a waiter, you know, is it worth it? It is definitely, I mean, in my opinion, that that would be a situation that's just not worth it. So I think it's going to take more work on our members and our attorneys to look closer at what they're doing, make the right decisions on a case-by-case basis, and where there's a situation where you need to have pushback with the client, you're really protecting yourself and the client. You know, the media is chomping at the bit. There's all kinds of things going on. Most of it is about COVID-19 and treatment and doctors, but it's only a matter of time. So slowly they're going to start unwinding the debt collection situation. I'm already seeing some media about it, and I think that the way we all behave now is going to have long-term impact. So I would suggest that, you know, if your competitor is in your mind being too aggressive, eventually that behavior is going to bleed over either into the media or among the judiciary or other attorneys. It's all going to backfire. It is not going to work to your benefit. And ultimately, if you're the lawyer that got your client's name on the front page of a newspaper for some misbehavior or some perception of misbehavior, you're not going to have that client too long either. So I think that these are considerations that as business owners and attorneys, you need to take into consideration.
Yeah, let me comment on that, Scott, as well. There's good points, Nathan. But let me add a few things. Number one, the practice of law is regulated by lawyers. We are self-regulating to a great extent, unfortunately, except in New York City and Maryland, where you're required to have a debt collection license. But let's put that aside and let's talk about self-regulation. Lawyers, and again, go back to the preamble, you have ethical problems that arise between your responsibilities to the client and to the legal system, but also it recognizes your own interest in remaining an ethical person while earning a satisfactory living. Now, you have your creditors bar association. You've put out guidance. If you have members that are engaged, I think, in very aggressive tactics that are contrary to that guidance, then you need to take action yourself within the organization to cause the self-regulation to occur, to cause your members to come into compliance. It's the same as RMAI. The debt buyers do not have a code of professional responsibility in the sense that lawyers do that is also enforced by a body of government, right? We have the Supreme Courts of each of our states that do that. RMAI has its certification program. It encourages its members to self-report. We issue guidance that tells members what to do. And at the same time, we issued guidance with respect to the COVID, and we expect our members to follow that guidance closely. We cannot tell people what to do. The same in lawyers, with lawyers, but we can put pressure, and that's what's necessary. To the extent that someone may be in violation of a court order, then you have the ability to report that conduct to the disciplinary authority in your state, especially when it's in violation of legislation. And we're seeing legislation, for example, in D.C. I also want to talk quickly about these special and emergency orders. And I want to draw your attention to North Carolina. There's been a lot about North Carolina. I haven't written anything about North Carolina because it's probably the best example of where caution needs to be adhered to when dealing with these emergency orders. North Carolina's order was issued by an insurance commissioner concerning debt collection. And how debt collectors got into insurance is beyond me. But it's issued under a set of beliefs that usually only work in the insurance industry. And there's a lot of talk that North Carolina is deferral of all debts concerning debt collection. I would read the statute that is referred to in that order very carefully to see the scope of actually what it applies to. I would also look at each of these emergency orders very carefully. Do not just look at the text of the order. Look to any press releases or other types of public information coming out from the regulator concerning it, because what would appear to be an allowance is really something that they're trying to restrict, or what would appear to be a restriction is not as broad as they would say it would be in their public statements. Proceed with caution when having to deal with these emergency orders and proclamations.
Great point, Don. And I would just add to what Nathan was saying, you know, and you were saying from an RMAI perspective, is NCBA also has a code of conduct. And it is very important that if there are any bad actors who are NCBA members, that we do self-report and try to have those discussions with them. I would even argue, speak with your local creditors bar association on the state creditors bar front as well. I know we're having more and more meetings on the New York side, just talking about how are we all handling it, and start developing that camaraderie between your organizations to make sure that everyone is apples to apples and there's not someone standing out who could hurt it for everyone else. So I will just end here by saying, you know, we're in a delicate ecosystem right now. And I think both Don and Nathan have made it very crystal clear that it is about doing the right things now. And, you know, even though we are all in the business of making money, we have to be mindful about the long-term value. So Don, Nathan, really appreciate the great information you provided today, and NCBA for giving us this platform, and all of the members for joining us today, and hope everyone is healthy and safe. And I'm sure there'll be more panels coming up in the coming weeks to keep everyone informed. So thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you all. Good luck.
Thank you so much. I just want to thank Scott as well for moderating today's panel, and for his insight and information. And we look forward to future briefings coming up, and we look forward to everyone being healthy and safe. So thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.